This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It was an election year in a divided America. Tens of thousands of absentee ballots were sent out by the state, and eventually the Michigan Supreme Court weighed in. Now, before you say, yes, April, I remember all this from last year, I'm not talking about the 2020 election, but rather the election of 1864. Joining us to tell the story is the president of the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society, Carl Herstein. Carl, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, April. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So 1864 was a pivotal year in the American Civil War. Was the re-election of Abraham Lincoln, who was a Republican, was that already a foregone conclusion?
No, not at all. The war had been going on for a long time, having started several years before. Things hadn't been going particularly well, despite various Union victories in 1863, and there was tremendous war weariness in the land. In addition to that, the Democratic Party in the North was particularly tired of the war, and there was considerable interest in trying to find a way to bring about peace, even if that meant letting the southern states leave the Union permanently.
Sometimes it's hard to remember the scale of the war effort. More than 2 million people were mobilized for the Union Army in the North. I take it that voting was a big problem for these soldiers?
Yes, that's right. Michigan had provided 90,000 troops over the course of the war. That's a lot of people, obviously, in a population the size of Michigan at that time. There really was very limited history with respect to voting anywhere other than in your place of residence. The concept of an absentee ballot was really something very, very new. There had been a little bit of soldier voting during the Revolution in New York, and there actually had been a statute allowing soldier voting outside their place of residents in Pennsylvania during the War of 1812. But other than that, the idea of voting anywhere other than where you lived was a pretty foreign concept and one that was of great concern to both the citizens and the court because of concerns about fraud and preserving the purity of the ballot, as they used to say.
So what was Michigan's solution once election time rolled around?
Well, Michigan, like many of the other northern states, decided for both practical and principled reasons that it should try to allow the soldiers to vote. By the time of 1864, almost all of the northern states, one way or another, enacted either legislation or constitutional amendments to allow their soldiers to vote in the field. Now, that could take one of two forms. The form it took in Michigan was based on what was called the Iowa model, where they actually essentially brought the polling place to the soldiers. They had commissioners, and the soldiers actually cast their ballots in the field as if they were in their polling places at home. A few other states followed a different model, more like our absentee ballots today, where they actually sent in a ballot that was counted at their polling place at home.
What was the critique of absentee balloting at that time?
The concern was the possibility of fraud in the first instance, but also there was a concern about intimidation of the soldiers in the field. And both things turned out to have some merit to them. There were numerous examples of officers and others exerting influence on the troops to try to get them to vote for continuation of the war effort. As you might imagine, tempers ran very high with the Civil War raging and these troops potentially dying for the Union cause. At the same time, there was concern about false ballots and things of that sort. And there was some of that both on the Republican and Democrat side. There was actually a ring of people associated with the state of New York that was uncovered and prosecuted where they were trying to falsify absentee voter votes for Lincoln's opponent, General George B. McClellan.
The election did take place as scheduled, and there were some really, really close races that year in Michigan. How did the courts get involved?
Well, actually, the courts were involved in many of the different states because constitutional and practical complaints were made. There were actually 9 courts that weighed in on the issue, and Michigan was the last of the 9. The concern was that the Constitution in each of these states imposed restrictions on voting. And the question was really a fairly simple one. Were the constitutional restrictions in a particular state intended simply to limit the qualifications for voting? In other words, did you have to be a citizen of a particular state over 21 and so forth? Or did they also regulate the place of voting and the manner of voting? And different state constitutions had different rules with respect to these things, as did Michigan.
It was interesting looking at how this case was presented to the Michigan Supreme Court. The arguments didn't really touch on political pressures within the Army ranks, but instead drilled down on this constitutional question of whether people could vote outside of the precinct in which they resided.
Yes, and to understand why that was, you have to understand the makeup of the Michigan Court. The Michigan Supreme Court consisted of 4 justices at that time, all of whom were Republicans. And this was obviously an extremely difficult issue for a Republican court because it had been the Republican Party which had pushed soldier voting in Michigan, led by the state's attorney general, who was the one who was handling the particular case at issue. And therefore, as they pointed out in some of the opinions, this was not a case where their sentiments were in tune with what they felt their constitutional duty was.
The justices ultimately decided that the state did not have the authority to send out all those absentee ballots. But it kind of sounds like even the majority justices didn't really agree with each other. Can you explain where they were coming from?
Most of the justices were in agreement that the constitutional language did not allow for voting to be held outside the place where a person resided. But there were sort of different angles taken with respect to why that constitutional decision had to be made. Justice Cooley, for example, looked to a technical flaw that existed in connection with the Soldier Voting Act, which failed to talk about the exact jurisdiction in which the votes had to be returned. And he was able to point to that as a flaw in the statute. The other justices looked either to the history as to why Michigan's constitution should be interpreted as requiring vote in the jurisdiction in which you resided to various degrees. You could look at the language itself and draw conclusions from that. You could look at the history and draw conclusions from that. You could look at the decisions from other states and draw conclusions from that. But I think, to answer your question more fully, I think one of the reasons that the 3 justices who voted to invalidate the act wrote separately is because each wanted to establish their sincerity and their honest judicial feelings as to why they needed to vote against something that probably each of them personally favored and that their party strongly favored.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Carl Hurstein. He is president of the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society, and we're talking about the contested elections of 1864, the first in Michigan in which large numbers of absentee ballots were in play. Carl, were final election tallies changed as a result of the court's decision?
Well, that's an interesting question. In this particular case, it actually certified the result of the election of the prosecuting attorney for the County of Washtenaw because in certifying the election, the canvassers had actually rejected the soldiers' vote. So it really didn't change the decision in Washtenaw County, where if they had counted the soldier vote, Twitchell, who was the challenger, would have won as opposed to Blodgett, the incumbent. But interestingly enough, there was a follow-up decision to this particular decision of the court where they had to determine the question of whether votes taken in the state legislature could be overturned because some of the legislators had been elected due to soldier votes, which, if not counted, would have meant that their opponents would have won. Well, interestingly enough, the same court which decided the soldier voting case concluded that the state legislature had the right to determine the qualifications of its own membership, and therefore it refused to overturn a particular law that had been enacted by representatives who had, if you had not counted the soldier votes, would not have been certified as elected to the legislature. So a complicated legal result.
I'm guessing a lot of people who are listening to this right now voted last year via absentee ballot. How were the constitutional issues that the justices pointed out in the 1860s? How were those issues ultimately resolved?
Yes, certainly. What happened was that the following year, in 1866, the people of the state of Michigan adopted a constitutional amendment, which allowed the legislature to make provision for things such as soldier voting. And so that was the beginning of an effort that, you know, culminated in changes in the various state constitutions and implementing legislation, which allowed absentee ballots in, you know, a much wider variety of circumstances.
Looking back at this time, the Michigan Supreme Court was divided in its decision. The majority decision invalidated the votes of thousands of people who were fighting to preserve the Union. I wonder how you feel the court's decision has worn over time.
I think that the decision is a testament to judicial independence. And in many ways, that's the way it's remembered. Clearly, it was a difficult decision to invalidate the votes of people who were putting their lives on the line for the Union. And the three justices all expressed concern about that and indicated that a constitutional amendment would be appropriate. But what the most famous of the three justices said, Justice Cooley, I think is something that he would say is a principle that still applies today, which is that one needs to remember that the purpose of the Constitution is to stand as a bulwark against temporary feelings in times of passion. And that if it doesn't serve that purpose, the document is of little use in preserving our liberties. I think that was the general feeling of the court. I think that's how they would want to be remembered today with respect to that decision.
Carl, do you think that people understand the context of all of this? I sometimes wonder if we're in a period where folks are ready to look at and interpret history to suit what may be going on with them at any given time. And heaven knows this has been a year when a significant portion of the electorate has been looking for reasons to question absentee ballots. Do you think about how people understand the full background of what was going on at the time?
I would really urge people to actually read the decision if they're interested in what the court had to say. The court, starting in 1865, when Justice Cooley actually joined it, is considered the greatest court in the history of Michigan, with the most famous jurists that the state has ever produced. And the opinions written by that court from 1865 over the next 20 years are well worth reading and considering. The court was extremely thoughtful in how it dealt with this very difficult issue during the most difficult time in the history of our nation. Each of the justices tried very hard to balance the many difficult equities that they were facing. They were extremely sensitive to the fact that if they were to deny the soldiers' vote, men who were in the field dying for the Union cause were being disenfranchised. At the same time, they were well aware of the concerns that both parties had about potential fraud. They were concerned about the implications for the difference in the roles of the legislature versus its constitutional authority. And they were sensitive to the history behind the Constitution and the reason that the various provisions had been adopted. I think they made a very thoughtful effort, whether you agree with the decision that they made or not, to apply the Constitution as they believed it was intended by the people of the state. They looked to an understanding of the Constitution as to how they believed the people had adopted it, and that was their lodestar. And as I mentioned earlier, it was their belief that no matter how difficult the decision might be politically or personally, it was their obligation to follow the Constitution because it was intended to be the anchor of our liberty, as Justice Cooley indicated. And so I'm deeply impressed by the effort of the court to deal with this difficult issue and the thoughtfulness and the wisdom of the justices dealing with difficult circumstances and attempting to do their duty as they saw it, free from partisan political requirements, at a time when the country was engaged in a civil war, passions were at their height, and it was easy to be emotional rather than wise in making a decision.
Carl Herstein is the president of the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society. Carl, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.